I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we will talk with the mayor of Indianapolis, Greg Ballard. As the mayor's re-election campaign begins in earnest, we will talk with him about his hopes for the city and the lessons he's learned in his 4 years leading Indianapolis. We will talk about parking meters, the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, the Super Bowl, and all the other opportunities and challenges before the Circle City. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please do take advantage of this chance to talk with Mayor Greg Ballard here on No Limits. First, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard. Mayor Ballard, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you.
I also would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're going to be talking about the mayor's tenure in office and his hopes for re-election for the next hour. You can join that conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Mayor Ballard, we actually had one of your opponents, Melina Kennedy, on the program just a few weeks ago, and I started the conversation the same way I'm about to start it with you by asking the question, why do you want to be mayor? Again, what is it that drives you to want to do this?
Well, it's a hard personal decision, actually. Honestly, when I ran in 2007, I thought the city was kind of going in the wrong direction. I thought we needed to change things up and how we're doing it, and I think we've accomplished that, to be honest with you. All that said, there are big projects that are in the works right now, and I'll go over a few of them. And the reason I want to get reelected is because I want to be able to complete these projects. I don't want them to stop. Let's start with some obvious ones. Police reform. We've been working on this for over 3 years now. We're about to come to the fruition on this. Well, I keep talking about the personnel continuum, the recruiting, the training, the promotions and personnel evaluations. You may or may not know that there were no personnel evaluations. There was no performance documentation before. And that, I just didn't think that was appropriate, coming with my background in the Marine Corps. I know that, who do you know who to promote? We had a promotion process, but who's getting promoted? Because you don't have any performance documentation. So is that appropriate? Probably not. I would suggest to you that's not appropriate. So anybody could essentially put themselves to be a sergeant. We didn't think that was appropriate. We needed to have some documentation. So that had to change. The recruiting is finally going to change. They're going to get trained up as recruiters, which they had not done before. We're going to go out and get the appropriate people. I was a commanding officer of a recruiting station for 3 years in the Marine Corps. I know how to do this. I know what it should look like. And we have not been doing that. And we've been working on this, again, for 3 years on all these things. The training had to change, absolutely had to change. The academy was kind of got into itself, too insular. We're not necessarily given the sort of training that we wanted our police officers were not in line with the national policing models. So we completely redid the curriculum at the academy. Sergeants and lieutenants are now trained in a course. They're not just given a couple of days. Here's the paperwork for a sergeant, which is what it used to be. Here's the paperwork. Go do it. Now the sergeants have a two-week course. Lieutenants have a similar course. In fact, from here, I'm going out to talk to the new lieutenants course right after this program. We have a leadership academy. I was a little stunned to find out that there was no leadership training. We have 1,600, 1,700 sworn officers with no leadership training. In a paramilitary unit, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. So all of this is changing. And this isn't, this isn't stuff that necessarily gets in the news. It's not exciting. It doesn't look, it doesn't really play on TV, but it's absolutely revolutionary in the police department. When you look at the recruiting and the training and the promotions and the performance evaluations, and the changes that we're making, and people are buying into it. Everybody's buying into it. We had a meeting last week, mainly with the diversity, public safety diversity task force. Mm-hmm. FOP was there, people from the department there. People are buying into it, and they understand what we're trying to do. That is absolutely revolutionary in our police department, and I don't want that to change. That's one of those things we can't afford to change.
What were the obstacles there? Why did it take 3 years?
Cultural change. Absolutely, cultural change. I talk about sometimes people don't know what they don't know. They hadn't seen this before. Mm-hmm. I lived this for 23 years in the Marine Corps. I know what this looks like. High-performing organizations always have these things in place. Always. Mm-hmm. You go to any business, and they'll tell you they go seek out the people that they want. They don't really wait for people to walk in the door. They go seek them out. Then they train them up appropriately. And then they have some performance measures. And then you know who's eligible to be promoted. Those were not happening in our police department. They just weren't. And so we had to bring this to the table. And it takes a long time to do this. And it's still, I want to make sure right now we're in the third iteration of the Leadership Academy. It's not a couple of days. It's 4 weeks long. Mm-hmm. And you could talk to police officers who have been there, and they would tell you, some of them have said it's a life-changing experience. I would tell you that at a minimum, it is changing the way they look at their jobs in leading people on the force. That is dramatic, to be honest with you. And that we've got all these things in place. It took a long time. In fact, it was just over a month ago that I finally bought off on the performance evaluation. So I was the guy holding that up because it wasn't where I wanted it to be. And I think we finally got it where it is. We want to make sure that we vet it, we get it all done. And I think we're moving in the right direction. It doesn't necessarily get out there, but this is absolutely revolutionary stuff, and we need to make sure it keeps going.
How will that change things for?
Well, over the long haul,
the way people will see
the
it
people who come into the police department will be well vetted now. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that's. I'm not suggesting that people previously weren't. We've been lucky to have pretty good leaders in the police department, but this will introduce an element of competition. We will make sure that. People who come in will have integrity testing. That's another change to make sure all of this is in place. And so we get the right people in, make sure the academy represents the best in the policing models in the nation. And then we make sure that there's performance. And if they're not up to performance, we now have coaching for them. We have now have the ability to say, hey, this, you need to look at this, you need to look at this. Again, wasn't being done before. And then we have obviously a promotion process that's going to change. It's going to make sure that it's competitive, that people who have a history of a good, who have a good record are the only ones who are eligible to be promoted. And, you know, there's a top tier, and that's, in any high-performing organization would tell you that's exactly the way it needs to be done. And it was not being done in our police department before, and it is now. We're in the process of all of this right now. And that is just one thing that I want to keep going. Not to mention the Rebuild Indy initiatives. I mean, mm-hmm. It took a little... Go on 16th Street, right outside here, our studios. You see the work that's being done all over the city. I want to continue that process because we will do it in the right places. We know the streets and sidewalks that need to be done. We've got all that input. We want to make sure that we do that and make sure we get down these abandoned homes, these unsalvageable abandoned homes. That's another thing we want to keep going. The ERP, something else that is going on that is we have neglected for a long time in this city. What we call the Enterprise Resource Program. Mm-hmm. This is all the back office functions of the city. We think we have about 1,100 shadow systems in the city, a little Excel spreadsheet over here, this little software program that some department bought in 1988 or whatever. We're merging all those into one system. Instead of 1,100, we'll have one. And that's going to take a few more years to get done, too. And I don't want that to stop either. These are things that we have neglected in this city for decades, should have been done a long time ago. We're doing them. And I wanted to continue to make sure that they stay a part of the city process.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about the challenges he sees before the city. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. James, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
And I understand you've got a question for the mayor.
Yeah, I've got quite a few, actually, but the first one...
let's work with the first one. We'll take them one at a time. All right.
The first question I would ask is the mayor is, why did we contract for an outside firm to run the parking meters? Why would we give away that extra percentage of profit that could return to the cities? It's inconceivable why we would farm that out and lose that additional revenue. And isn't it most important with the parking meters to allow people an opportunity to park downtown and to So that's the first question. Why are we going to farm that out? What's the benefit to the citizen?
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the question, James.
First of all, a lot of the parking has been private anyway. We're not losing a percentage of the profit. Here's what the parking deal is about. It's that most of the people, in fact, I just saw yesterday, Evans Time was working on the meters. That's a locally women-owned business. Denison Global is also a locally owned business who's operating here in the city. So we went to ACS because they have the technology, but we had a vetting process. They had their RFP on that. Can't remember if it was RFP or RFQ, but anyway, we had about maybe six or seven people come in. We got it down to a final four. Everybody had essentially somebody from the outside, and as I recall, and some people from inside of Indianapolis. Part of the process is we're huge on minority and women-owned businesses. The numbers on that are staggering compared to what they were 3 years ago in the city as a whole. So that did play a part in this. We wanted to have a minority and women-owned business in this. For people to say we're losing a percentage of profit is completely incorrect. We will make more money on this as a city than if we did it by ourselves. That's just the way it is.
How can you explain how works?
How well are we doing on parking meters now? When you bag a meter for an event, how long does it take to get the meter off, the bag off? Forever? Right? This is not something that we do well as a government. The government does certain things well. We do not do business-oriented mechanisms well as a government. And it's not just the city. It's everybody. Everybody does. So if we were to set up a business to do this, we would have personnel costs, infrastructure costs, maintenance costs, all these other costs. We don't have any of those costs. You know what this deal is? We get a little bit of money up front, nowhere near the $400 plus for rebuilding. It's a little bit of money up front. We get a lot more money on the back end of this, and our risk is zero. All we do is take the money. That's all we do. We just take the money, and it's more money than if we had done it by ourselves.
And the other part, though, I think of James' question, if I can reframe it, though, is does that limit to some degree people's access to park downtown then through this? What sort of controls are in place to see that parking fees don't escalate rapidly?
City County Council has control of the parking fees from here on out. So you have input in that regard. Our parking meter charges had not changed in 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
35 years. So it's gone up a quarter. It's going to go up again in 2012 a little bit again. What we were finding out, especially when you go downtown and retailers want business downtown, I think we all agree on that one, people would just park for the weekend. They just park at night. They just leave their car there. And so there's no turnover for the retailers. The business community needed some turnover on that. So you just can't leave your car there for the weekend and say that's it. So when people come down for events on the weekend, there's no place to park because somebody has parked it there Friday night and has left it there till Monday morning. So that's businesses need the turnover. The retail businesses, the restaurants, they need the turnover. That was a piece of it also.
Okay, so there will be increased fees then for weekend parking.
The fees will be the fees will be the same. What we did, one change we've already made is on the evenings from 5 to 9, you can do 4 hours instead of 2 because of events downtown.
Okay.
We've already made that change.
So there won't be any cost then to the people, increased cost to people who are using it downtown.
There will be based on what it used to be.
Okay.
But and then the part of that's already been done, and then it'll increase again in 2012. But what people want is the technology. People didn't like carrying around quarters all over the place. I think it's 40% of the people already are using cards for it already, and it just started. So that's what people really wanted out of this was the ability to use credit and debit cards. And the technology that will come to us in the future on parking meters is pretty neat. If you need to extend it soon, we'll see. We'll see how soon it is. If the technology gets there, you may be able to extend your meter through your phone at a meeting that you're at. That sort of thing. So we were never going to get there. If anybody thinks we were going to get there as a city to do this sort of thing, we weren't.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about the, to some degree, the state of the city as He is up for re-election. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his vision for the city and some of the lessons he's learned along the way in his 4 years as mayor. We're getting a lot of calls and emails. I'm going to take one right now from Jill Richardson, an email question. She said, I would like to ask Mayor Ballard if or when he plans to strengthen our city's smoke-free air policy. I think all workers should be protected from secondhand smoke. His reluctance to do so is one of the reasons I'm voting for Kennedy, who supports a stronger policy. I think I'm not going to go with the rest of it and just get to the question.
Well, remember, remember the policy was just changed in 2005 or 2006, so it's not that old anyway. And so I would say, honestly, the council is not there to begin with, and this is an issue that is a balancing act, clearly. Between the freedom of people to use a legal product and what they say is the health of the workers. And I understand that. I fully understand that. I avoid smoke at all costs. This public policy versus personal on this is very conflicting for me. I've been very upfront about that. So I avoid smoke as much as I possibly can because after a few minutes in smoke, I get sick. My throat gets sore and everything else. So, when I go out to folks and talk about this, they understand that it is it's a balancing act between what are the rights of people, the freedoms of people, if you will, versus the workers. And on where I am right now, I think we have about a 99% smoke-free city. Yeah, there's only like 350, 400 places that we think that have it, that you can smoke. Other places you can't. And so that, when I weigh that, I think about that also. But I've served in countries where freedoms were pretty routinely denied. I'm a little, I've been very upfront about this. Mandatory is something that I weigh very, very carefully.
Let me ask you. You mentioned at the start that the council's not there right now.
That's right.
But if the decision were yours, where would you be on this?
Still the same place. Actually.
Still the same place.
Same place. Same
so
place.
You wouldn't push because, through.
Well, it's the freedom to use a legal product versus the health of some workers. I mean, that's really the balancing act, and most people were very happy when the 2005, 2006, whenever that was, came through. People were pretty happy about that. And then when I first became the mayor, people seemed to be pretty happy about it then also. So
what's changed? Because I will say we've had programs where this is a persistent theme when people call.
People bring it up. Well, they may bring it up, and I understand that. But I would tell you the first year and a half of the mayor's night out, I'm out in a different part of town every month. I've done it ever since I've been the mayor. Issue never came up. People care about roads and sidewalks and bridges and alleys, crime and all of that. That's what I get asked about routinely. It comes up when it gets played up a little bit, but when I do the mayor's night out, I think people are asking me their most pressing questions. Does it play for a lot of people? I understand it's a heated issue. I get that completely. But I get a lot more questions about sidewalks, bridges, roads, abandoned homes, that sort of thing.
What has been the toughest challenge in your 4 years as mayor? What's the one that surprised you? Reform?
I get asked that all the time. The only thing that was surprising, if you will, was what I call the presence activities, talking, doing press events, that sort of thing. I thought it might take on average about 2 to 3 hours a day. Sometimes it takes 5 to 6 hours a day. It's a lot of time devoted to that. Other than that, it's pretty much what we expected to find. I put in a long day. I mean, I last night somebody says you're everywhere, and I am everywhere. Everybody knows that. I go to so many different events. I go late into the night, usually 5 or 6 nights a week I'm out. So people understand that. They know I go to as many events as I can to support great causes. So I'll just continue to do that. What the difficult issues, clearly, The budget is always going to be a continuing issue, mm-hmm. with the income tax being down as it was last year, and property taxes, the assessments are down also. But the good thing about that, I was one of only two mayors that I know of that came out publicly for the property tax caps. And I think that had some effect on the State House when the capital city mayor goes over and says that. And property taxes now are down on average about a third, and about 98% of the people in the city have lower property taxes than they did before. So I'm pretty proud that we were able to influence the legislature some on that. But all that said, it influences the budget process, and it'll be tough again this year.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his hopes and concerns for the city. I'd like to invite listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Carolyn, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Thank you for calling the program. I understand you got a question for the mayor about the police.
Yes, I'm very supportive of police reform, the emphasis on good recruiting and training and all of that, and the emphasis on crime prevention and community policing. But given all of that, I'm really puzzled as to why the OK unit is being dissolved.
What is the OK unit?
The OK unit works in collaboration with a 501c3, the OK program of Indiana, and it's a law enforcement-based mentoring program for African-American young men in our four community high schools in IPS. And it's been very successful in bringing down the rate in which these young men are involved in criminal activity. It helps their graduation rates are up. They are going on to college. You know, they're doing well in school. They're staying in school, doing well in school. And yet the IMPD is dissolving this unit and just moving to a large unit they're calling community services, making all of our school coordinators, the police officers who are currently in the unit, reapply to even be in community services unit and telling them they'll no longer be an OK unit to work together in this very successful community policing effort. And I'm just kind of baffled as to why that's happening.
All right. Well, we'll try to get an answer for you. Thanks for the call.
I don't know that the OK program is going away. I was just briefed on that last week, to be honest with you. If people don't know, OK, it stands for Our Kids. It's a good mm-hmm. program. It was just in Arlington until we expanded it out to the other three high schools, I think just last year. We don't expect so that's news to me. I mean, I'll check on that, obviously. But I do know there was some hope that OK would expand beyond the African-American community. And I think that may be what you're talking about. You may not know that piece of it, actually. There was some talk about expanding it between the African-American community so that other young men could take advantage of that mentoring that went on with OK. So, but as of last week, I understand it was still in place and that had been resolved. If it's not, I'd sure like to get your number and we'll give you a call back.
What has been the toughest part? We've spent an awful lot of time talking about police reform. Has that been the toughest challenge that you've had to deal with in this job?
I usually don't look at extreme things like toughest, best, most, worst. I tend not to think like that, honestly. I would tell you on an ongoing basis, the budget is always going to be difficult. I mean, there's always things that are always on your mind, and they are crime, jobs, budget, and infrastructure. Those are things we work every day. Those are things people really, really care about every day, and those mm-hmm. are things that we work on.
What part of the job do you like the most?
Well, it's
do you even think of those terms?
Yeah, actually do. Yeah. I get asked that a lot. What's the best part about being the mayor? I get asked that question quite a bit, and I give the same answer. I've given the same answer since very early from being the mayor, and that is I'm privileged to see so much good work going on in the city. This really is a caring and compassionate city. There are people who are doing great work in the city. Underneath the radar, it doesn't necessarily get in the press. People don't talk about it so much, but there are individuals and small organizations who do so much good work for other people, and I see it all the time. I could tell you about different places like Unleavened Bread and Dove House and things like that just do so much good work in the city that the general populace doesn't even know about, but I know about because I get to see it.
What are you going to look back on when if 4 years from now, or whenever you decide not to, as sort of the crowning, what would you like your legacy to be?
You know, I get asked that too.
I'll try to come up with one you haven't heard before.
That's okay. That's a good question. I haven't been asked that in a long time, but I don't think about legacies. Other people write legacies. There's a lot of things I'm very, very proud of, though. A lot of cultural changes that, again, doesn't get a lot of play. Six Sigma. We brought in Six Sigma to the city, the process improvement methodology. We're training people on that across the board. We've had over 50 projects with Six Sigma in the city, and we're training our own black belts. We have two people on the cusp of getting a black belt. We hired a black belt a couple of years ago. We were on the cusp of two people getting black belts, and we have green belts in process. We're looking, taking care of these long-standing issues, like I told you, the police reform on the personnel continuum, the ERP, the infrastructure, which I think is blatantly obvious to so many folks, those sorts of things. Taking care of our pools, because of short-term political pressure and budget pressure, were never fixed. Mm-hmm. And it was disgusting. I'm very open about this. It was a shameful and embarrassing episode in our city's history, what was going on with our pools and our bathhouses in the parks. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. And nobody would have, the courage to close the pools so you could fix them. Mm-hmm. And I did. And we were called very nasty things. Mm-hmm. Along the way, it was pretty horrible, to be honest with you. But those pools and those bathhouses needed to be fixed for our kids in the urban core, and nobody would do that. Mm-hmm. And we did that. So it's taking care of these long-standing issues that and putting this thing back to where decisions are made for the long-term health of the city that I hope people remember.
Well, let me try to reframe this. Maybe this is a way. Just listening to you talk, obviously accountability matters to you a great deal. It's one of the themes that you've established. In what ways, then, do you hold yourself accountable? What are the standards you apply to your performance, saying, okay, I had a good day today. I got done what I needed to get done. I'm trying to draw it out so that we get some sense of how you approach the job and how you...
Well, it's funny. On a day-to-day basis... I always talk about just advancing the ball. If we can advance the ball on some issue, I think we've had a good day. There's so many big things that we're attempting to change, to fix. It's, you know, just advancing the ball a little bit each day is probably worth it, because at the end of the day, you get it done. I'm very lucky. I've got a lot of good people. But when I hold myself accountable, I've got to be able to sleep at night. And really, I'm not like... everybody, I'm probably like most people in this regard, though. I have to make sure that I've done it the right way, with the right intent, or else I don't sleep at night. So that's my standard.
Have there been nights as mayor when you haven't slept through the night?
Yeah, like but it's, yeah,
when you haven't felt comfortable.
I haven't felt comfortable, not because of those reasons, just because of worrying about certain things, but not for those reasons. I've always been able to. To go home at night saying I've done it the right way for the right intent. Mm-hmm. So I haven't fallen off of that.
What's the problem or challenge that has been the most intractable for you that is now, you thought?
Declining tax revenues, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So the good thing is the census showed that Indianapolis is still growing. We've maintained our AAA bond ratings, which I think is good. One rating agency actually increased their ratings for us even during the recession, which is good. So that helps bring investment into the city when people know we're stable, because we're only one of three large cities in the nation with all those rating agencies having AAA on us, San Jose, San Antonio, and us. That's why all these jobs are coming in. That's a piece of that, why all these jobs are coming in, because they know we're stable. But we have to be able to maintain that. That's a big key. We have to be able to maintain that.
We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about the challenges facing the city. Please feel free to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pretty good so far, but it's early.
That's good. All right. Well, now I understand you've got a question about flood problems for the mayor.
Well, not exactly. It's really his infrastructure replacement program. Okay, I live at the intersection of West 57th Street and Bonnie Bray. And the West 57th Street Bridge over Crooked Creek is up for reconstruction. okay, over the creek. Well, and we all appreciate that, okay? But, of course, we'll do absolutely nothing to relieve the flood problems we experience out here on Cougar Creek, because the real culprit is the antiquated Kessler Boulevard Bridge, the second bridge downstream from me.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue I'm calling about, I am the single most highly impacted property owner in this project, and it will involve the city of Indianapolis taking part of my property, that is, exercising right of eminent domain. And the survey stakes that were put out here for right-of-way, I question greatly, because one of them is 2.5 feet from the foundation of my house. And the engineer was out yesterday talking to us and admitted that on their plans, they mistakenly had my house located 10 feet farther east than what it is off the right-of-way. That disturbed me.
Okay, well, in terms of the issue, my guess is we're not going to get this thing resolved on the air.
Sure. Oh, I'm aware of that.
But if you get your name and number,
yeah,
we'll
we'll
get
the
that.
In this case, if you have, I'll broaden the conversation out a little bit. If you have a question or concern about something like this, what is the process? I'm asking the mayor.
Okay, I'm listening.
What is the process by which someone like Gary should bring that concern to get it resolved?
We've had Mayor's Night out every month, very open. I bring my entire staff out. That's very open about all this. So we answer every question that we possibly can there. If not, we take it back. You can also call the MAC, 4-M-A-C. The DPW has their own liaisons also. You can do that. You can talk to the neighborhood liaison in your area, who is Mary Chalmers. You can talk to her also. Or you can just send an email it's like an Ask the Mayor email on the website. So there's multiple ways to get a hold of us and get this taken care of and figure out what this is. We've been very open about all this, trying to get information. Our ear is to the ground all the time, and we want to make sure that we continue to do it that way. We'll have to check into this to make sure. If there's a resolution here, I'm hoping that there is. Dave Sherman, who is our public works director, I always tell people there's probably not 10 people like him in the nation where he's able to put the engineering and the infrastructure piece next to the money piece and he's just so smart in getting these things done that we're really lucky to have him because he was essentially retired and came out. So he's the kind of guy who can get either he or his engineers can get this figured out.
And, Gary, we've been given a number here that is a good one to call to resolve this. That's 327-4622. I'm going to give that
to
you again.
MAC. Yeah, the MAC line.
That's the MAC line, 327-4622. Please make a call. We are talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his hopes and plans for the city as he faces reelection. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about the challenges he sees before the city. We were talking about a pretty specific one there. How much of your day is spent doing that sort of problem solving? I mean, it's sort of the truism that if you're your mayor, you come in with visions, and what kills mayoral careers by and large is if they don't get the snow plowed off the streets or smaller things like that it's in the details.
Snow removal is not a small thing.
Well, no, and I'm not saying that, but it's not generally.
I know.
It seemed that way to Jane Byrne in Chicago.
Yeah, I understand. And I think people have noticed the last couple of years on snow removal how well it's been done. Actually, I get a lot of individual type questions, and you can probably imagine that usually I deal with like the broader picture, if you will. But at the same time, I take all of these questions, I take them, and I take them back, and we do respond. I think that's one of the hallmarks of what we do. We have people who actually respond back and try to get the right answer. You may not always like the answer, but you're going to get the answer back from us, and we will on this one, too, as long as we can get the name and number. I hope we got that on that guy.
We did. I can toss the number out again if it would help. 327-4622.
I was talking to a group of folks early this morning, and there's five people lining up to tell me about this. It's pretty routine, and for somebody who's out as much as I am, and I'm out in the public quite a bit talking to a lot of groups, I get a fair amount of that. I really do.
Ben, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pretty good.
That's good. I understand you got a question about the libraries.
Yes, I do. I can tell by listening to the mayor, his diarrhea words, that he's enamored with himself. But I wonder why they can find money for the Colts and the Pacers and can't find money to keep the libraries open.
We will take that question up. Thanks for calling in with it. Appreciate it. How about the libraries?
Well, you may know that we have been pushing something over at the State House, trying to make sure that we can use the COIT money, the income tax money, to do that. I think it did create some, what happened with the libraries previously, and people are passionate about the libraries. We understand that. But it's not really Colts Pacers versus libraries. It's just not like that. People try to make it like that, but it's completely different funding streams, completely separate. And has been like that for a long, long time. And people probably don't know this, but, Herb Simon gave an enormous sum to the library before all this started. And he supports it even without all this hubbub that's going on about it. But we want to keep the libraries open, clearly. I mean, that's the whole point of why we're over at the State House right now, trying to make sure that we can use that sort of money coming into the city to make those sorts of decisions to help the libraries. I mean, we're the ones at the forefront of that. So the library's in pretty stable right now. We want to make sure it stays stable into the future, and that's what we're going to do.
What should the relationship be between city government and public libraries?
Well, right now I don't want to say no relationship, but we don't control the board. We don't have anything like that. If the legislature, depending on what they do, I'm not sure what they're going to do, that would change. We have a bill over there where the mayor and the council would have the appointments to the board. So that's if that comes through fruition tomorrow, if it gets completed tomorrow, then that will change. Will definitely change.
Where is that bill right now?
It is right now. I mean, at this particular hour, I don't know because, everything's getting tied up right now here in the last 2 days of the legislature.
Yeah, and they'll stop the clock tomorrow night at midnight and go for an extra two or three hours.
But we've been working on that pretty hard. And so, I want people to understand we're the ones out there trying to make sure that we have the ability because by state law, we can't do this. And so, we're hamstrung. People think we weren't doing anything. Actually, we put a high-performance government team with the library. Our high-performance government team that we initiated and used some processes with the library to help keep them stable. And the city administration did that. So that was, it's a good relationship. It's not a formal relationship. It was an informal relationship. But we put the high-performance government team and worked for months with the libraries. And then we going over the legislature to try to make sure that we are able to keep have more revenue streams, if you will, to help the library in the future.
Would it strengthen things if there were a more formal funding relationship there or more?
I think sometimes when in the past when people put boards and commissions together, and by the way, this is one of my things I always tell when I assign people to the boards and commissions, I always tell them, I'm not sure I'm doing you a favor here because sometimes it gets, these are great people, highly skilled, highly educated, who do a public service for no money and then they just get beat up sometimes. But I do think if we have more influence over the library, it appeared to me when all this happened that people wanted the city government to have more influence over how the library operates because then we can affect the funding and we can affect operations a little bit more than we could in the past. And I don't say that's a bad thing. I took it that the people wanted the library, I wanted the city administration and the council to be a little bit more accountable for the library. But the way it's set up now, with the municipal corporation, we weren't able to have that much influence other than we put our high-performance government team to talk to them.
Mary, welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
We're doing well, thanks. Hi. I understand you've got a question about jobs for the mayor.
Yes, I do. I just wanted to ask the mayor, What has he done and what's he doing right now actively to bring more jobs to Indianapolis?
Thanks for the question.
Well, our development team, our economic development team, has been working pretty hard on that. I'm sure you know. You may not know. I mean, not too much. Sometimes these things don't get out. But we had the biggest year ever for new jobs last year. Counting them exactly the same way that we've been counting for the last 10 years, we had 8,700 new jobs announced last year committed to the city of Indianapolis, which is about 4,000 more than ever. So in a difficult climate, that was impressive. But that goes back to what happened back in 2008, 2009, where the Develop Indy team, our economic development folks, started creating these relationships with people in the city to help. So if they were going to expand, and most of these companies have other opportunities to expand into other cities, we're obviously asking them to stay here, with the climate for business here, with the lower taxes, the essentially a distribution area geographically, the AAA bond ratings. It's just a good place to do business, and I think people understand that. And so we were able to do that. We are traveling internationally to make sure we have to create those relationships. No question about that. Haven't had any big hits on that front, but we still are traveling internationally to do that, to make sure about that. So we've not to mention the unemployment rate has gone down almost two in the metropolitan square area. It's gone down almost 2% from the past year. So that's good news. On top of all that, we were able to manufacture some things, put some things together. You know, when we talk about those 8,700 jobs, that does not include Rebuild Indy or Wishard or the North to South or the IU Health projects. So we have hundreds and hundreds of construction workers going on working right now as a result of those projects, which we helped to come to fruition.
Mike, understand you have a question on this topic as well.
Right.
Thanks for joining the program.
Thank you. Hi. With the growth that the mayor has seen in Indianapolis, how or what is Indianapolis doing to entice and welcome diverse groups to Indianapolis, with what countering that with the conservatism that I see that our legislature is going towards? I see that's an oxymoron. It bothers me and it worries me.
Thank you for the call.
I understand that. It is worrisome. We have been traveling. Again, it's about creating relationships. We have doubled the number of sister city relationships in the city of Indianapolis in the last 3 years. We've traveled to China, India, Brazil, England, Germany, Japan. We have people traveling to other nations also. The word is out. We're looking at for future relationships. We're certainly looking at Africa in a couple of places. We're looking to expand. I've been very open about this, and you know, some people want to beat up the mayor sometimes about why do you have such a global outlook. But I've been very upfront from day one that we have to be more globally competitive. We have to reach out across the world. When you travel to places, and I knew this from my Marine Corps days, that people know New York and they know L.A. and they might know Chicago, but they don't know Kansas City and they don't know Denver. And they don't know Indianapolis. You have to go tell them that this is a good place to do business. This is a good relationship to have. And that's what we have been doing. And we've been doing it rather aggressively, and we've been very open about it because I think it's important. And I tell people that if we're going to be competitive in the next 30 to 40 years, we must have a global outlook. In addition to all that, we started a Chinese festival. This will be the fourth year for it. We started a Native American festival. We started an Indian festival, trying to bring these groups out. You're going to see soon a sports park, an international sports park on a side of town that we're going to open up. You're going to see so much. We truly emphasize the international piece of this. You may know about the international marketplace up in the Lafayette Square area. That area will be rebranded eventually into the international marketplace. There's a plan in place trying to get that together. So I think Indianapolis as a city is sending out very strong messages around the world that this is a place we want to do business, and we've been working very hard on this, and we've been very open about this. And a lot of this goes back to my Marine Corps travels, obviously, but I've been around the world. I've lived in different places around the world. My wife is the first lady of color in Indianapolis, very sensitive to all this, and I want to make sure that we continue to be a welcoming city.
What did the Marine Corps do best in terms of preparing you to be mayor, and then generally, because everyone who's been a Marine says that's a pretty much a transformational experience, for good or bad, in some cases.
I hope good.
Yeah, well, for most people, there's not, you know, military discipline's probably not for everyone.
Sure.
And some people go and do it for the wrong reasons.
Sure.
But I guess what I would say is, what was the best part of that in terms of preparing you to be mayor, and in what ways did the Marine Corps not prepare you or not prepare you well to be mayor?
It early on, it was very easy, and I learned this very young as a lieutenant. Frankly, I never thought about the term leadership, about getting things done. I mean, I never thought about those sorts of things. When I was a young lieutenant, you learned early on that you better get it done or you're not going to be around. But you can't do everything. You have to influence people. You have to delegate. You have to do all those things. And so you learn to influence people appropriately, and you learn how to get things done using a team. I mean, using the talents of people around you. That's what you learn very quickly. And if you don't do that very quickly, you're gonna have a hard road. I was able to do that, learn that very quickly, obviously, as a lieutenant. And then I was very lucky when I had a platoon. I learned that, and then my next job was actually an aide-de-camp to a general. And I'm going from doing platoon-level activities to listening to the huge activities at the Marine Corps and DOD level, sitting in on briefings and that sort of thing. And I was able to marry those two. That was very important in my career development, seeing that and seeing how those two matched up. So getting a broader picture while understanding that you have how to use those tools that you have to influence people to get things done. And there are certain schoolings that I was able to go through. I think the international travel has definitely affected my approach. I spent 2 years from 96 to 98 in Quantico, Virginia, going to school. One was the Command and Staff College, which is pretty broad. It talks about operational planning, essentially theater level planning. And then the second year was we call the School of Advanced Warfighting. What we call in the Army, when you go to this school, it's called, I can't remember now, so I'm getting away, but you become a Jedi Knight, the mm-hmm. unofficial term of Jedi Knight. This is the Jedi Knight school for the Marine Corps that I was able to, only 23 students in the class. And we traveled to Europe and to Middle East to look at battlefields and talk to people and that sort of thing. And that was essentially the relationship between the national strategy and the theater level of war, the operational level of war. And that was huge to me by seeing all of those big picture items and how they all matched up. So I think there was a mix of things that made me see the big picture. Specifically, recruiting really helped mm-hmm. with the personnel continuum reforms in the police department. That was a very specific item, but I think it's the broader picture, looking at the broader picture and understanding as you go up the chain and your responsibilities get much larger, that you have to rely on people to get the smaller details done, and you can't. You have to tell them the broad picture of what you want done and then leave it to them. So I think that's what really helped.
And in what ways did your Marine Corps experience not prepare you then?
I haven't thought of that. I'm not so sure.
So I came up with one finally.
Well, actually, you know, it's kind of funny. I find most criticism is based on speculation, not on really what happens.
Yeah.
And when I first became the mayor, everybody seemed to be telling me what the Marine Corps was like. I thought that was hilarious. Well, you know, they're not going to do this, and you just tell people they do it, and all. I mean, none of that. I mean, it was really almost funny to watch people speculating on who the new mayor is, and his background won't prepare him for this. And it was just the opposite. They, you know, people have never lived on a military base, never worn the uniform. Telling me what the Marine Corps was like was pretty funny.
Is that the biggest thing they've gotten wrong about you?
Well, they don't see it wrong now. I would say there's a lot of things people did not expect about me. You know, I can't, I don't want to relive election night, which generally speaking was a good night, but some things were said that not by me, mm-hmm. but by other folks. And I don't think people saw my support of the arts coming.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, people just assumed otherwise when actually, you know, I've been very supportive. I go to a lot of events and I'm the guy holding on to their funding, and they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it increased it this year, and they all know that now. So I'm the guy that makes sure that happens. They never saw the Office of Sustainability coming. We had no sustainability in this city, none. We had somebody doing part-time recycling. We now have 7 full-time people in the Office of Sustainability. They didn't see the bike lanes, the urban gardens, the rain gardens, the pervious pavement, the curbside recycling. They just didn't see all that that we've been pushing very hard. But I've lived around the world. I mean, I've seen these things, and I have a good sense of what needs to be done. I don't think they saw, and I got to get this look in while I can.
Go ahead, please.
But, you know, bringing in great people is something that I think we've done very well. And Dave Sherman and his team re-engineered the consent decree, the sewer consent decree. We're the first city of 700 cities to do this, to re-engineer that with the approval of the EPA and Department of Justice. It took over a year of negotiations to get this done. First city, we're now the model across the nation. It's national news, not so much local news. It's national news in the engineering discipline. And we saved $740 million for the ratepayers. Huge, huge. $740 million we saved. Huge national news on the cover of E&R magazine, the engineering magazine kind of Bible. And that's big stuff. It's big.
We have been talking with Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard about his hopes and plans for the Circle City. Mayor, thank you for taking this hour. It has been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much. I got one update if you got it.
Okay, real quickly.
Program is not being cut. Is in fact being expanded now to now include a more diverse group of kids.
Okay, that was one of the questions from our listeners. Yeah. We had a lot of questions from listeners that we were not able to get to, and I apologize for that. I hope as we get closer to Election Day that we could have you and perhaps your Democratic opponent in here at the same time, and we could have kind of a free-flowing conversation.
Check that out. We'll see.
All right. I'm tossing it out there, and I would like to see if we could do that, and I think the city would be served well by that. Thank you again for joining us.
Pleasure.
I really
do
appreciate it. I also would like to tell our listeners that next week we will be discussing the 100th anniversary of the very first Indianapolis 500, the centennial celebration. Our guests will be Eddie Cheever, Bob Jenkins, and Mark Dill, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Please do join us next week, and thank you for spending this time with us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Matt Sosi, and Intern, Monica Schwab. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.